me is vital and important, and I feel pretty proud of the fact that I was called upon by people of another faith to undertake and do heritage. I don't know if any other Jew in the city of Pittsburgh has been asked that.
Well,
I've got the concrete proof because there it is in the book of Foreign, you see. This is what I've been trying to explain to both of you. But there it is in black and white and in color.
Well, let's
and what these people are all about.
We're going to pick up on it. Let me just start with the intro.
I think this particular thing is a very important aspect for people of the Jewish faith to try to understand.
We've just been speaking to Marty Wolfson. This is Deborah Gordon and Roseanne Ariel for the Pittsburgh section of the National Council of Jewish Women. It's December 20th, 1990, and we're taping Marty Wolfson. And could you please state your name?
Marty Wolfson.
Okay. Thank you.
Continue
on with what you were saying, that you
were
the only, you think you're the only Jewish person that's been asked
to write a book and review these people from other religions. No, I didn't write the book.
Well,
not, I don't write these books for other religions.
Uh-huh.
They provide the copy because this is their background.
Right.
But when they come to me and they ask me to take that and formulate it and bring it all together like a coordinated effort, then I learn something about them as well as they learn something about me, because we share in a discussion, of course, things that come up about their religion due to the copy that's been written, the pictures that I incorporate into the book, and various drawings that I make, like the one of Michael O'Connor, the first Catholic bishop of Pittsburgh. That was the first time that had been done, and I did it with a Father Zernicki, and he called me, and I tell you, it was just the two of us that worked on the book together. And just recently, since you were here last, I received a call from Erie. And they were doing a display up there about the Catholic faith.
Uh-huh.
And what happened is they saw my drawing of Michael O'Connor, because there isn't anything else around about him. And they asked me if they could take that, blow it up, and use it for a final display. So I was pretty proud of that fact, too.
One of the things I asked you about on the telephone when we spoke, where we were interested in anecdotes or interesting tidbits about any of the famous people that you've met in Pittsburgh, in France when you were there, various places, and had asked you to sort of think about if you could remember any of them and tell us about some of them. You had mentioned Art Rooney, who they know.
Well, I think I also had mentioned the fact that I met Pablo Picasso, the great artist, who has since passed away. And I made a drawing of him, and I showed you the drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
What was it like drawing him? I mean, at the time he was still famous.
Yes, because this was done in 1940s.
Mm-hmm. Was that uncomfortable for you to draw him?
No, because I had a desire at that time to meet and draw people
that
were friends.
What was he like?
To try to remember back, I had to speak French in order to converse with him. I wanted to try to get as much of a personalization in my drawing, and that's why I was talking to him about, you know, the kinds of things that he does and the fact that as an American and as an artist, at least we share that kind of interest. But I was interested in him as a human being. You know, what sort of give him the inclination of doing the kinds of paintings and drawings that he does. And I can't recall every single word of the discussion. It happened so many years ago. But all I can remember is that that the meeting was a very favorable one. And he was very fascinated by the fact that I was drawing him. Because nobody calls him to draw him. And when I guess anybody is approached, can I make a caricature of you?
And everybody's interested. Yeah.
Then everybody becomes interested, you see. Not trying to change the subject, but I did about almost 30 to 40 caricatures the other night for a pharmacy party that was being held, and mostly all of them were women. And they said to me, will you draw both of us? I said, two on one? It was a mother and a daughter. I said, you know, what kind of a dream did you have that someday you would be doing something? And they said, well, we'd like to take a cruise. So I drew them on a boat. And they laughed, and they were happy.
Uh-huh.
And I saw what art, just like what it did for Picasso, it gives you a little bit of a lift. And it's a little humorous, but very personal. And people love it that way. And so doing Picasso, as well as people like I was just telling you about the other night, as well as George Brock, who was a famous artist, a painter at that time, and the Secretary of State of Mr. Auguste Paleski of France, and Maggie Roof, who was a very well-known fashion designer. And I met and drew, I don't know, pretty close to about 40, 45 different well-known people of France who represented France. And this gave me another idea. Why can't I do this of Americans? And so when Mrs. Roosevelt was overseas, because I think I may have pointed this out before, I approached her. And, I was a real outgoing guy. I went and did things that nobody else was doing. Now that I think about it and go over it, and you know, I'm talking to you about it, I can see myself as a young GI with some time to be able to do these kind of things. And this is something that I felt that I could treasure and other people could enjoy and learn from it.
Did you ever see these people afterwards, after you drew them?
No, because I was on the move constantly.
What made you so self-possessed and confident, I mean, in your childhood, upbringing? Any influence?
No, this is something that I did ever since I can possibly remember. My teachers in school, grade school, McKelvey, it's grade school, excuse me, were very encouraging. I remember one teacher specifically. She gave me all the encouragement that I could ever desire. And this is the kind of a young kid I was. I wanted to do things that nobody else was doing. I wanted to be a different kind of an artist than just a painter. And that's why I would like to draw people. And
what about people here in Pittsburgh? Are there any special famous people you can think of? You said, I guess, you drew Roberto Clemente?
I did Roberto Clemente, I did Honus Wagner, and I did Pye Trainer, I did Mayor Caligiuri.
What were they like? Can you describe them?
They're very, very warm. And they were very, very kind and hospitable as far as having their pictures made by a young artist. And I was telling them what it was all about. I was trying to record something. With Honus Wagner, it was part of a book that I was going to be doing. And I wanted to incorporate his life and the kind of individual he was, so that when we wrote about him, it would all tie together.
And what about Mayor Calgary?
Well, I knew him very well. A very very close to mayor, because I knew him before he was mayor. And he was just a real nice guy. Every time I met him, I met him at he was a sort of a an alternate where he was a distinguished person that was allowed to join Rotary because he was mayor, and he was very well respected that. And Bob Prince, the drawing that I made of him is used by all the charities, and Bob was very much taken, and what they're doing with it now is just amazing, trying to utilize, and they utilize the drawing that I made of him.
Do you get royalties for these?
No, no. Well, that's another point.
What about Jewish organizations? Have you been involved? Are you a member of Jewish organizations outside of your synagogue?
I'm a member of B'nai B'rith. Mm-hmm. I have been a member of B'nai B'rith for a long time. And, of course, member of a congregation in Temple Emmanuel in the South Hills.
Have you drawn, I guess, Jewish people in Pittsburgh? For a Jewish organization, have you been asked to participate
in
professionally the Jewish community here, either by recognition or working or whatever?
The only thing I've done and have been called upon to do is, in recent years, nothing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. All the things that I've done, and I've tried to incorporate Jewish people mm-hmm. into my books. Mrs. Rosenblum wrote a book. She wrote columns about people in publications, I think it was Jewish Chronicle. And when she came to me and asked me if we can incorporate these into a book form, I helped her. I would help any organization. But most of my calls have not been.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Because as I said to you before, and it's something, this is why I can't understand it. I've had so many calls from other religious faiths mm-hmm. and doing things for them and not for my own. Mm-hmm. I did a history of the Temple Emmanuel, mm-hmm. and I may have pointed out before that I also helped start Temple David in Monroeville,
right.
And I was their cantor for a number of years.
It just seems to me, with all your publishing experience, and with you've been so involved with the Pittsburgh community at large, it would seem to me that would be you would be somebody in the Jewish community that people would turn to for various reasons. That's what I'm wondering.
There's something I can't understand why this has not happened after all I have given to my people and to the community at large, and also to all the time that I invested when I was a young fellow in the Iron Coffin settlement, and to the temples and the synagogues, and yet no one has ever called me concerning a book or anything of that nature.
You think the idea just hasn't evolved? Perhaps if you thought of the idea and presented it? I don't know either,
to be very honest.
I mean, has there? Maybe there hasn't been anything done, but there are publications, I'm sure, that I'm not aware of. But
because I offered, for example, to do some editorial cartoons, mm-hmm. which I do, and drawings, like portrait drawings, for the Jewish Chronicle.
Mm-hmm. They never come
Never come through. Mm-hmm. And as I pointed out, look at all the people. I showed you pictures of people that whose faces I've made from all over the world. And those first two books on Pittsburgh. And you notice that when we talk about religion in those books, I incorporate Judaism as well. And I'm proud of that fact. I don't bypass that. But I've never fully gotten the recognition from my own people. That book up there that I did on great events in American history, two Jews, myself and the fellow that wrote, helped write the book. And we received the Freedom Foundation Award from Harrisburg. And
for what book?
Great Events in American History.
Okay.
And this was the first time that blacks were incorporated into a history book.
What year was that?
I did that, 1969.
And that was the first year?
Yeah. It's not something that people will remember
yeah.
or think about. But I thought about it. The young man who, for example, who developed the whole basis for the blood bank,
mm-hmm.
Charles Evans Drew, colored fellow, and was happened to be killed in an automobile accident because he couldn't get enough blood to him. And I incorporated that into my story, into my book, with drawings of him. So I've always felt that it was important that people work together. And this is the whole philosophy that I've used and tried to incorporate with my clients.
Sounds like there's a good book there for someone to develop about the Jewish people and my
Jewish people
style and the
raising the Jewish history of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I've always felt that too. And I wish I could do it myself, if I had enough capital to do it. Unfortunately, I don't. And I'm being very straight with you and telling you. And but there's got to be organizations and people out there that...
Well, like Consul.
That can feel that something like that would be a very valuable asset to the entire community, because you can't take a tape or whatever and go into every home.
No, that's just for this.
This is something, a book is an item that can be preserved and put on a shelf or put on a coffee table, and anybody coming in there, whether they're a young child or an older person, a senior citizen, can benefit from it. Doing a book is a very learning experience. And it's hard for many people to understand this, but it's like giving birth to a baby. Really. You have labor pains and everything else that goes along with it. But I'll tell you, it gives you the greatest feeling in the world. Once it's finished,
it's there forever.
It is. That book that up there, I think maybe I had mentioned before, about Oakmont. The borough came to me and asked me if I would help them with that book. It's a 100-year history.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned a couple weeks ago, I may have told you this, that it was just given a top award by the Western Pennsylvania Printing Association, case-bound books. And you preserve things not only in written form, but the way it looks. The appearance, the way it feels, you turn each page, it has to live, and it has to tell a story. And that's why I keep doing it, and I probably will always do it, as long as I'm able to. But I like
it. How do you get ideas? Do the ideas come to you? Do you ever send the ideas out to people that might be interested in you? I mean, as a publisher.
Here. I've had a tremendous idea, for example, of doing a book on Art Rooney, Bob Prince, Dick Caligiuri, because they've all passed away into one book, and what they did for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what it's done for our community, and I can't get anybody off the dead center. And I've approached foundations and everything.
And then I understood. There a Bob Prince Foundation?
Mm-hmm. Nothing. Some people are interested, but don't have the funds to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you do a book, it's not something that you can do without some kind of capital, at least to start it off with. And then if you pay it back.
I don't know, maybe for even historical purposes, in terms of capital, what kind of capital does it take to publish a book?
Every book
idea.
Is different. Every book is different. There's no two books alike.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look up there and you see there's no two books actually alike.
Mm-hmm.
Each one is different because of the paper it's printed on,
mm-hmm.
the size it's printed,
mm-hmm.
the amount of pages that it encompasses, the research that has to be done, the number of photographs that have to be put inside, when art...
The number of people would be interested in it, yeah.
And also you have to think about the sale.
Right.
Of how many people? That's right.
Like Oakmont book, how many people are interested? You have a captive group of people you can
right.
say right offhand.
When we brought out the Pittsburgh, the story of the City of Champions in 1980, for example, there was no other book like it in the country. And there was no other city like it because they won more awards and more championships than any other city in the United States, maybe the world. So it was a unique effort that told and recorded and documented for all time all the good things that happened during that 10-year period. Now, if we wouldn't, if this wasn't done, what kind of record would we have today? Where would we find that information? In bits and pieces, instead of it being collected. And you can see it. All you have to do is open page by page by page to see people's pictures, events that have happened. Everything is there. You see? This is why doing historical books is very important.
You know, I want to ask you one question that came up to you as we were going through all the information you had given us.
Mm-hmm.
I never asked you, when you were on TV, it was a long period of time, did you run into any kind of anti-Semitism at the time?
No.
In the early television
days? In the early television days?
No. And I'll tell you why. Because I did things that no other entertainer on television was doing. I was the first one in the country to do a One God series, which was about Catholicism, about Protestantism, and also about Judaism.
But you're saying because you were unique in what you did, people regarded you as special, and that
yes.
way they didn't, there was no, that you didn't feel any kind of anti-Semitism
no,
at
no.
all?
No, I never felt anti-Semitism. In fact, when I was in the Army, I was the only Jew in my whole company. But again, I learned to work with people and try to show them and I was a human being, too.
Mm-hmm. So that must
but I was a caring
yeah.
human being. And when I was on television, I worked for the School for the Blind, School for the Deaf, Mentally Retarded. It didn't matter to me who the children were or what color they were.
Right.
I had them on my show.
Right.
I won the very few black groups of children on the show. I was aware of these things, Jim. I always thought about it and felt very strongly that something had to be done. And this again was from my learning experience from being in the service, being associated with so many different kinds of people who many of them were probably anti-Semitic or not liking blacks or not liking this one, not liking that one. But
you never ran across any.
I always kept myself free and aware of everybody around me because I wanted them to understand who I was, what I was doing, and why I was doing it. And I visited homes, schools, hospitals, for all kinds of people, for all kinds of children.
You overcame it, whenever, if there was any kind of anti-temptation.
Yes, yes. And as an individual, you can do this. And if each individual would try and have this in mind, that put that kind of thinking out of your mind completely, and live together and share together. And this is the philosophy I've used. Yes. In fact, I just did a publication just yesterday. I just sent it to the printer. And one is two hands holding each other like this. People working and sharing together. I've used this as a terminology for the hospital shared services people as a slogan. Because, and they understood it. And they're not all Jewish. But it's something that it's got to be done almost on a continual basis. There's no let up. Especially you, I'm sure you pick up the paper every day and you see this one fighting against this one or that one. And that's why I've always felt I'm a Jew to begin with. And I don't evade that feeling. But the only thing that bothers me, I've received less recognition from my own than I have from the outside world. Now you go figure it out. And I'm being very honest, Deborah, because look, you tell it like it is. Why hide it?
Let me ask you another question, and that is, what do you view as your most significant accomplishment when you look back over your career? What do you view as most significant?
I may have pointed this out to you before. I've met a lot of people. I've drawn a lot of faces.
Mm-hmm.
And still the one thing that sticks in my heart and in my mind, that one little child, that blind child, that in 1953, that I helped learn how to draw on my television show. That one experience I will cherish for my entire lifetime. If anything I've done stands out in my mind,
it's
that one.
In retrospect, is there anything you would have done differently?
Like
something you could have changed in your life?
No, because I had to do everything myself. To be very honest with you.
Make your own decisions.
I had to make my own decisions ever since I can remember. And I've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sorry for anything. Because I thought it was all constructive and all personal and very satisfying.
One other thing I didn't ask you about before is, I never really asked you about your social life and traveling and hobbies. Do you have any hobbies? Anything special?
I love music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I've always tied art and music together on my TV show.
Do you play instruments?
Yeah, I used to play.
In the
United States Army Band.
Do you play anything now?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the radio.
Yeah.
And
can I turn that off?
Huh? Turn
yeah.
it off?
Yes.
I've been listening to it vaguely.
Okay.
I'll
tell you.
But is there special hobbies besides that you might have?
Yeah, I love to bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I bowl with the B'nai B'rith group.
Uh-huh.
But I love bowling because it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a pretty good average, too. 172 isn't too bad.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's
and
good.
I always like to help. We have AZA kids that,
uh-huh.
that bowl with us, and I try to help them out
uh-huh.
to be a better bowler.
Uh-huh.
And I used to play baseball when I was in the service in the early days.
Uh-huh.
But
about traveling? Do you travel a lot?
No. Mm-hmm. I have traveled. Let's say because during the war years, I was overseas and traveled quite a bit and saw quite a bit of that end of the world. Mm-hmm. And since I've been back in the United States, I'm too busy working on things that needed me close by.
Right.
I'm not what you might call an avid traveler. I like to see things. But that's why I incorporate them into book form.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can always look back on these things and it reminds me of things that I've seen or have done. And it takes up my time.
What other information outside of what we've asked today and what we've asked before, what are